Eternals is the latest film set in the Marvel Cinematic Universe. It is a sweeping saga about 10 immortal aliens with superpowers. They're tasked with protecting humanity from creatures called Deviants, but are forbidden to interfere with human history in any other way. They're also a family of sorts. They squabble, they nurse grudges, they reconcile. The film is directed by Chloe Zhao, the indie director behind such small, intimate films like the Oscar-winning Nomadland. Eternals is unlike anything she's done before, but it's also unlike anything Marvel's done before. I'm Glenn Weldon, and today we're talking about Eternals on Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Here with me today is NPR producer Mallory Yu. Hey, Mallory.
Hey, Glenn.
And also with us is Andrew Limbong. Andrew is the host of NPR's Book of the Day podcast and a reporter for the Culture Desk. I'm still getting used to that, Andrew. Arts Desk, Culture Desk. Hi, Andrew.
Rebranding, baby. Yeah,
rebranding.
What's up?
And rounding out our panel today is Daisy Rosario. She's an executive producer at Stitcher with the show Celebrity Book Club with Chelsea Devantes. It's in its first season right now. Hey, Daisy.
Hey, Glenn.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. So in the interest of full disclosure, we'll start off by acknowledging that one of the stars of this movie, Kumail Nanjiani, is a friend of this show. We've had him on the panel before. He plays Kingo, who can shoot cosmic energy from his fingertips. He's one of the 10 Eternals. This is a very big cast. But the ones who are the most central to the plot include Icarus, played by Richard Madden. He can fly and shoot eye lasers. There's Angelina Jolie as Thena. She can summon weapons out of the air. There's Cersei, played by Gemma Chan. She can transmute matter. Selma Hayek is Ajax. She's a healer. Brian Tyree Henry is Phastos. His superpower is engineering, I think. The Eternals have been on Earth for 7,000 years, and we follow them through major events in world history before catching up to them in the present day when their ancient enemies, the Deviants, return. Daisy, this is a big swing in a lot of levels. Did it connect for you?
It is a big swing. It is many, many swings. There are so many swings happening in this movie. I mean, I would have to say I enjoyed a lot of it. I did not find the ending to be particularly satisfying, but in a very kind of standard big battle fatigue way. Like, just like the rest of this movie is kind of odd and interesting in a way that really stuck with me and does take a lot of chances that you don't see in other Marvel movies. And then you kind of reach the big battle and you're like, okay, obligatory big battle. And like, that's the part that falls the most flat for me. But otherwise, I was really intrigued by all of the swings that were happening.
Mm-hmm.
If you love the movies and there's certain things that you really like the quippiness and things like that, you might be disappointed here. But if you like those movies and you also want to see them start pushing into different directions, you may enjoy this. And I think for me, it kind of fell on that side of enjoying it. I found a lot of the characters really interesting. I found some of the choices wild, and that wild was sometimes a very good wild, and that wild was sometimes a very bizarre wild. But at least I was interested and engaged, and I also really like so many of the actors in general. Like, there's just charming actors galore. But man, it is funny. Like, Kumail did not need to get that ripped for this part. in a way that he's already acknowledged. But that's like really funny once you actually see like what his character's power is and how it is used. Yeah. But overall, like, it's something that I know I will find myself watching again, that I'll be kind of really curious how I process the first, you know, 75% of the movie. But I have a hard time thinking that I'll ever enjoy the ending more.
Mallory, where did you come down?
So I'm basically one of those people who likes the MCU but wants to see them start kind of pushing in a new direction, pushing that formula a little bit more. And I think The Eternals did that for me. I enjoyed this movie, and I do have a few asterisks. I think there were a few swings that missed completely for me. Now, I know very little about The Eternals, so I think some of my ability to appreciate this is simply that, for better or worse, this was my first introduction to some of these characters and this storyline. And I do agree that it's weird and odd, but I liked it. It was my kind of weird and odd. I really liked the characters. I liked Gemma Chan and the chemistry that she had with Richard Madden. I think that very often MCU characters don't really have that kind of romantic chemistry for me, and I felt these two characters did. I will have to mention that sex scene, because the only thing that I could think was, I don't like sand. It is rough and coarse and gets everywhere. And that's all I could think. Was it effective? I don't know, but it was kind of nice to see the MCU going there. I do have to say that this is a movie where early on, you're going to have to decide whether you're going to buy in or not. And if you don't buy in, I think the next 2 hours are going to be a little bit disappointing. But if you do buy in, I really enjoyed watching these characters kind of butt against each other and figure out how to work with each other after, you know, 7,000 years, after they've been apart for, you know, for decades at this point. I wanted to watch these characters move forward, and I wanted to see the way that they would integrate into the wider MCU. Do I think it was one of Chloe Zhao's better outings? Not by a long shot, but I did enjoy it.
Now, Andrew, you're not an MCU guy. Where'd you come down on this?
So, yeah, just to make my biases sort of clear, I was like a big like fanboy, but then in like the sort of the past, I guess like 4 years or so, I've sort of like did a complete 180, and now I'm just like a full-on hater. And I think they sort of like all MCU movies, I think, tap out at like a 7, a 6.5, 7 max. That's their ceiling for me. For this, though, I was like expecting like a mediocre, regular, degular, you know, Ant-Man 2 kind of movie. But I was like, oh, no, they went for it. You know, they went big. I found myself enjoying it a lot more than I thought I would. I felt some of that like haterade sort of like wash away, you know? And because it is kind of boring, right? This is the most MCU movie where just people sort of like mope around and talk about how like sad they are and how they feel, which is like my jam. Like, I completely understand if you watch this movie and think there's too much of that, but that's like, ooh, give me some more of that. Just like, oh man, this is a bummer. Like, I love that so much. And so it worked for me, but I understand why it wouldn't work for like a lot of other people. The movie lets you know like right away. There's like, it starts with this wall of text that I didn't finish. I don't know if I can't read that fast. I was like, I have no idea what's going on. But from that moment, because I didn't finish it, I knew I was like going to be lost, sort of. And I was like, I guess I'll just not worry about like the sort of intricacies of the plot. I didn't really understand who the bad guys were until like midway through. And so I was like, all right, I'll just like let the vibes take me where they're going to vibe. And, you know, Chloe Zhao's pretty good at vibing.
Yep. Now, a bunch of you have mentioned that, you know, you don't know too much about the Eternals. Here's the thing. Nobody does. Even me. I have no idea who the hell these characters are, because they're just not. We are scraping the C-list deep bench at this point of Marvel characters. And there's no harm in that. We can try and make movies about them. I went deep on this movie in my review. Really deep. Gave some folks the bends, I think, over the weekend. But I think it's interesting to talk about this movie because we've got this indie director who is all about interiority, right? She meets up with this giant, implacable franchise. And I've read some reviews which say, okay, so they're two polar opposites, right? Well, they're not. And I don't mean to nerdsplain, but I'm going to nerdsplain a little bit because if you don't care about this stuff, why the hell would you know? But the thing that put Marvel heroes on their map originally is that they had definable personalities and motivations from the jump, right? That was completely unlike what DC was doing across the way because they were all just kind of anodyne, blank cops in capes. Marvel created heroes with personalities. Some would say personality disorders, tomato, tomato. So the MCU is driven by CGI. I'm not saying it's not, but it's also driven by the personae of its characters. So granted, they tend not to be the kind of moody, introspective types that Chloe Zhao makes movies about. And when they are, you get Black Widow, and they tend to get a raw deal in MCU movies. But there is an intersection, right, between the Zhao and the MCU kind of Venn diagram. The thing that unlocked this film for me, and the reason I like it as much as I do, is how much one of its really central themes is fatigue.
Oh my goodness, yes.
That gets brought about by being overfamiliar with something. So the Eternals are a lot like those of us watching the MCU for years. We spend a lot of time watching something. We start to see the same conflicts, the same stories play out again and again. Now, that is a meta commentary on the MCU, hard to miss, but it is also about family.
Yeah. You know, you are hitting on something that has always really worked for me about Marvel Comics, the actual comics that I've read over the years. And if anybody ever asks me why I love Captain America, it's because he's codependent. And I find that fascinating. And like, that's not how we talk about him.
Yep.
That aspect of this, I appreciate you saying that those things are not actually so diametrically opposed. You know, I also like the idea of being in a place in the world where, you know, we have these kinds of directors who can take a swing in this way. I really don't want to exist in a space where the only way that directors like this can, you know, make work is to make really big budget stuff. But I think it's fun to like, let's just see it sometimes. Let's, you know, give it a shot. And, you know, the humanity of these non-humans is what I really enjoyed about it and what I just found myself so connected to. And that felt very now to me, like in this, like, you know, we are not at the end of a pandemic, but we're definitely closer to the end kind of fatigue and malaise that so many people are feeling. Like, you know, here's a movie that they started, you know, making long before this that somehow feels very current in that sense.
Yeah. And one of the things that I latched onto was this kind of sense from all of them that they wanted to go home and they didn't really know where that home was. Like they only had this vague amorphous sense of home. And I think as the kid of an immigrant, there is for me this like longing for a place where I belong, quote unquote. But then there's this sense also that home is sort of where and what you make of it. And I also appreciated that aspect. And I like that Chloe Zhao, because she keeps such a focus on these characters and their interpersonal relationships and their interiority, it kind of grounds the absurdity of the story. I mean, the Eternals and Deviants and the cosmos and, you know, there are just a lot of words and phrases that are kind of absurd out of context. And Chloe Zhao really grounds the story in people and their humanity.
Well, let's talk about that, Andrew, because like the mood, as you mentioned, of this film is so somber, but the actual stuff in it can get pretty goofy. I think the deviants look kind of goofy.
Yeah.
Now, I'm not turning my nose up at goofy. I want to be clear here, but like we must form the Unimind. I'm all for that. Just give me that. So how did that work for you?
Okay. This sort of goes back to sort of like my big picture beef with most of the Marvel movies. Is that they'll pose like interesting questions, right? Mm-hmm. But then ultimately the solution is kind of simplistic and kind of stupid, right? And so like, I don't know, my favorite like thought experiment is like Black Panther, where it's like really asking hard questions about colonialism, right? But then it's like the answer is like, oh, I guess we'll just build a rec center in the inner city. We did it, guys, yeah, I mean, right?
It seems pretty accurate, though.
And I think, like, this movie does ask interesting questions about, you know, like Mallory was saying, like, home and the meaning of home. And I think I was getting a lot of questions about, like, faith, right, and personal crises of faith and, like, what do you actually believe in? What's satisfying to me about this movie, it would almost be better without punching, you know? Mm-hmm. And if it just dawdled on the result of that crisis of faith, which I obviously won't spoil, but it's sad. And people have mixed feelings about these convictions that they're not even 100% sure that they believe in themselves. And I think they're making, my friend calls like Domino's instead of like pizza, it's like pizza product, right?
Yeah.
And so like, okay, they're making like movie product, which is fine. Domino's rocks ass.
Uh-huh.
But I think this is, with Chloe Zhao, this is the first time that they let somebody make like actual pizza. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. I love that. I love that. But of course, you know, she's not shackled by Marvel stuff, but this is such a weird property to attach because not only is it The Eternals created by Jack Kirby, who was all about big spectacle, characters making bold pronouncements, reaching toward the quote-unquote camera on the comic book page, but also lots of really abstract notions. And of course, what she had to do and her fellow writers was to kind of bring in to this world and try to ground things like, okay, for example, the notion of the mad weary, which is a condition that can befall Eternals. It's from the comics. It's a form of dementia. The thing is that on the comic book page, that is spelled M-A-H-D, capital W-Y, apostrophe R-Y. Mm-hmm. It looks all cosmic and cool. But then when you have an actor say that out loud and they say mad weary, you're like, what's wrong with her? Oh, she's got the mad weary. How weary is she?
I wasn't even sure if that's what they said at
first. She's mad weary, man. She's mad weary. There's so much of that where it doesn't quite work. And that's what I'm trying to figure out here about the goofiness and the somberness. There are threads here that get plucked up but never pulled. So the deviants can absorb the Eternals' power. You think that's going to be a much bigger thing than it turns out to be. And there's also what we mentioned before, some swings that don't quite connect. Mallory, you want to talk about one of those swings that didn't connect for you?
Yes. In order to do that, I think I have to talk about Fastos, who is played by Brian Tyree Henry, who I have to say, I always enjoy watching him on screen. Fastos is Marvel's first gay superhero. He's also a Black superhero. I do want to mention that I really enjoyed the scene with him and his little family. It's still really incredible to see a Black superhero embracing his brown husband. Like, it was just such a lovely moment for me to see. But a big part of this character's backstory includes a scene that I found to be just in such poor taste. We learned that Fastos has lost his hope in humanity after the U.S. dropped the atomic bomb at Hiroshima. I had a viscerally negative reaction because nothing that this movie could show about this moment, about what Hiroshima would look like after this atomic bomb, could even really ever depict the scale and horror that happened there. And I just have a big problem with taking gigantic human atrocities like this and making that part of one character's emotional journey. I also found the scene to be a little unclear in what it was trying to say about Fastos and his relationship to technology at the time. I think a lot of reviews and criticism that I've seen on Twitter have said that this is a scene that implies that this Black gay hero has literally created the atomic bomb. And what does it mean for this hero to be responsible for this tragedy? But I don't think that's what the scene was trying to say. It felt more like he was really wrestling with the idea that even the small technological advancements he has provided to humanity has made us capable of such an atrocity.
Also, part of what is odd about that one is that it feels more specific than the others. We do visit other moments of human atrocity, which include moments where we're essentially seeing, you know, colonizers attacking native people. And I don't want to not acknowledge the fact that we do see other kinds of human atrocities used as a plot device, essentially. And I would say the difference, if I'm remembering correctly, is more that the other ones are less tied to specific characters and their processing of emotions. But the idea of like human atrocity throughout history does come up multiple times in, you know, different ways.
Whenever you have superheroes who can fly and shoot laser beams out of their eyes, and you try to connect them to the real world too closely, all you end up doing is pointing out the huge gap that exists between our world and theirs. And that's what happened in that scene in a really, really big way.
Well, it's almost defensive, right? Every like half hour, it's like confronted by the same philosophical problem about like, if you've been around forever and had all these powers, why didn't you stop X, Y, and Z? It like shows that they didn't like commit hard enough to just like tap their hands out. It's like, oh, that's not what we're here to do. We're here to do this one thing and we can't be affected by anything else. If that's going to be your solution to that philosophical problem, then I don't know, stick to it.
I would like to just talk about the actors for a little bit. I thought it was fun to see Angelina Jolie just be like, yes, I'm a movie star and I will show you how well I know the camera from shot number one.
Yes.
Like I was like, work, Angelina, you know, stuff like that. That was really fun. But then you have these other actors like Brian Tyree Henry, who's a very good actor who I just have enjoyed in so many different things. And I really liked the cross section. I also felt very aware that I was someone who had not watched Game of Thrones. Like there's two prominent actors who, you know, feature in this movie who are from Game of Thrones. And I was sitting there going, I don't know that I've actually ever seen them in anything else, but I know that they're from Game of Thrones. Mm-hmm. But I really enjoyed that kind of mix of TV actors who are starting to come into their own. And you don't know until you're watching the movie exactly who we're going to focus on as much because it is so many characters and they do have to focus on some more than others. I mean, there were moments where I was just like, that seems fun that that person's doing a scene with Angelina Jolie. Like there was some exactly. version of that that I was just really enjoying. And so I liked that mix in this cast.
Yeah, there were maybe one too many like establishing team shots in this movie. But in those establishing team shots, I kept getting hit with this like realization of how different everyone looked on screen. Like it's not just a range of, you know, skin color and ethnicity, it's also a range of body type and shape that I really appreciated.
Yeah.
You know, we talked about how Kumail got really ripped for this and didn't really need to, but I also appreciated that Brian Tyree Henry was just Brian Tyree Henry. And, you know, we had differing looks for these characters in a way that I don't know that we have seen in other Avengers movies.
Okay, very good. Tell us what you think about Eternals. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet us at PCHH. Up next, what's making us happy this week?
This message comes from NPR sponsor Capital One. With Early Paycheck, you can get your direct deposit up to 2 days earlier. And with no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts, banking with Capital One is the easiest decision. Terms apply. See CapitalOne.com/bank. Capital One N.A., member FDIC.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Teladoc. Teladoc is here for you with 24/7 access to board-certified doctors who can diagnose and treat non-emergency conditions. And Teladoc's doctors can, where authorized, call in a prescription to be filled at the pharmacy of your choice. Teladoc is available through most insurance plans and also offers care options even if you aren't covered. Download the app today or visit teladoc.com/NPR.
Now it's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week. What's making us happy this week? Daisy Rosario, what's making you happy this week?
So what is making me happy is something that also gets me to tear up at least two or three times every time I watch it, which is the new season of We're Here on HBO. If you're unfamiliar with We're Here, it's the HBO show where three drag queens go to usually a small town in America and will help put on a drag show where local queer people are, you know, in some stage of their journey. Maybe they're not out to their family, or maybe they're out and they want to really own it, or, you know, different things. But essentially, these three drag queens that are all known from RuPaul's Drag Race descend on a town and put on a show. But it has so much heart. And it's been really lovely to watch. And also, it's something where you can see the way that obviously the pandemic has impacted the filming of the show. And There was something really enjoyable in, you know, episode one of this new season that has to do with the timing around that. So that show is just, you know, when I need to see humans connect and just hopefully let each other in, even though some of the parents can still be hard to watch at times, it makes me feel better than it doesn't by a mile. And that's one of the things I need right now. And so it's one of the things making me happy.
Oh, great. That's We're Here on HBO. I have not caught up with the second season yet, but on your recommendation, I'm just about to. Andrew Limbaugh, what's making you happy this week?
Yeah, so what's making me happy this week is this new EP called A Tear in the Fabric of Life. It's by a Kentucky metalcore band called Knocked Loose. I'm kind of like a noob when it comes to like metalcore and like this side of hardcore, but this EP, it's like six tracks long. It's pretty tight. It's 22 minutes. When the guitars go like chugga chugga, ooh, you like feel it. It's spooky. And like the bass tones is just like so nasty and like gnarly. I don't have the vocabulary to have like to say like it feels like disgusting and creepy. But it's like nominally sort of like a concept EP, which, you know, for better or for worse.
Sure.
And you know, it's songs about like guilt and survival. And it's mixed in such a way that the lead singer, whose voice on the sort of like metal scale is more of like a than like a, you know what I mean?
So, yes, I know exactly.
So it's on the higher register, yeah. Feels like he's like climbing out of hell. I don't know. It's crazy. It's good. And it sort of like makes itself known like from the first track, which is called Where Light Divides the Holler. Yeah, and that's what's making me happy this week. It's an EP called A Tear in the Fabric of Life by Knocked Loose.
Cool. Thank you very much. Mallory, you, what is making you happy this week?
So I also have something a little spooky to recommend. I've basically only been watching anime lately, so I'll talk about one that I've enjoyed. It's called Parasite, which is not to be confused with Bong Joon-ho's Parasite film. Parasite, the anime, is about an invasion of worm-like aliens who drill into humans' heads and take over their brains. They can still look like humans, but they're actually now human-eating monsters. The series centers on a 17-year-old high schooler named Izumi Shinichi, who gets taken over by a parasite, but not his brain. The parasite fails to take over his head and conveniently only manages to take over his right hand, which means that they both retain their separate brains and personalities. And Shinichi finds himself having to battle adversaries who are trying to eat him and his friends while also maintaining the facade of being a normal high school boy. I really liked this anime because it's funny. There's a lot of like fun banter between Shinichi and this alien. But it's still a sci-fi horror anime, so there's plenty of cool monsters, there's lots of gore, and quite a bit of angst. And I appreciated that the anime is just mean enough that it'll keep you guessing about who will survive to the end, which made me happy. I would highly recommend Parasite. You can find it on Netflix.
Cool. Thank you very much. Well, a bunch of us went spooky. I did too. I am a little over a year late to this party, but the film Host is a British horror film set entirely on a Zoom call during the pandemic. So it came out in summer 2020, when the whole notion of watching a Zoom call for entertainment was the very last thing on my mind. It's directed by Rob Savage. It's about a group of friends who turn one of their weekly calls into a seance, you know, for the lols, as you do. Guess how that goes. It plays out in real time. It uses the limitations of the form really to its advantage. It's very clever. That's the thing you keep thinking as you're watching this thing. Ah, how clever, how clever. Oh, she's dead. How clever, how clever. The acting is really natural. There are actors playing normal people, which is always, you know, this kind of thing is made or broken on how much you buy into the fact that it's, like, candid. And if I haven't convinced you yet to check out this film, which is streaming on various sites, let me just say three words and a hyphen. 56 minutes. Sold, right? Sold?
Ooh.
In and out. Surgical Strike does not overstay its welcome.
Not 2 hours and 37 minutes like
not
some
in
other?
In fact, Andrew, apropos of nothing, 2 hours and 37 minutes. That's the British horror film Host. My suggestion, watch it on your laptop wherever you normally take Zooms, right? Gives it a little extra oomph. And that is what's making me happy this week. If you want links for what we recommended, plus some more recommendations, subscribe to our newsletter at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. That brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at GH Weldon. You can follow Mallory at Mallory_U. You can follow Daisy at RunDMR. And you can follow Andrew at Andrew Limbaugh. You can follow editor Jessica Reedy at Jessica_Reedy, producer Candice Lim at The Candice Lim, producer Jared Gare at Jared M. Gare, and producer Ramel Wood at Blurgosphere. I like that. And you can follow producer Mike Katziff at Mike Katziff, that's K-A-T-Z-I-F. Mike's band Hello Come In provides the music you are listening to right now. Thanks to you all for being here.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. We will see you all next week when we will be talking about the new film, Spencer.